The reading's taken from Acts chapter 14, verses 1 to 20. At Iconium, Paul and Barnabas went as usual into the Jewish synagogue. There they spoke so effectively that a great number of Jews and Greeks believed. But the Jews who refused to believe stirred up the other Gentiles and poisoned their minds against the brothers. So Paul and Barnabas spent considerable time there, speaking boldly for the Lord, who confirmed the message of his grace by enabling them to perform signs and wonders. The people of the city were divided. Some sided with the Jews, others with the apostles. There was a plot afoot among both Gentiles and Jews, together with their leaders, to ill-treat them and stone them. But they found out about it and fled to Lycaonian cities of Lystra and Derbe and to the city surrounding country, where they continued to preach the gospel. In Lystra there sat a man who was lame. He'd been that way from birth and had never walked. He listened to Paul as he was speaking. Paul looked directly at him, saw that he had faith to be healed, and called out, "Stand up on your feet." At that, the man jumped up and began to walk. When the crowd saw what Paul had done, they shouted in the Lycaonian language, "The gods have come down to us in human form." Barnabas they called Zeus, and Paul they called Hermes, because he was the chief speaker. The priests of Zeus, whose temple was just outside the city, brought bulls and wreaths to the city gates because he and the crowd wanted to offer sacrifices to them. But when the apostles, Barnabas and Paul, heard of this, they tore their clothes and rushed out into the crowd shouting, "Friends, why are you doing this? We too are only human like you. We are bringing you good news, telling you to turn from these worthless things to the living God who made the heavens and the earth and the sea and everything in them. In the past, he let all nations go their own way, yet he has not left himself without testimony. He has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their seasons. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy." Even with these words, they had difficulty keeping the crowd from sacrificing to them. Then some Jews came from Antioch and Iconium and won the crowd over. They stoned Paul and dragged him outside the city, thinking he was dead. But after the disciples had gathered round him, he got up and went back into the city. The next day, he and Barnabas left for Derbe.
There's a quote from an anonymous vicar with which I share a lot of sympathy. "Everywhere St. Paul went, there was a riot. Everywhere I go, they serve tea." Paul had a far more exciting life than most of us will ever experience. In his second letter to the Corinthians, he shares some of the hardships that he experienced as he sought to share the gospel. "I have worked much harder, been in prison more frequently, been flogged more severely, been exposed to death again and again. 5 times I received from the Jews 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was pelted with stones. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and day in the open sea. I have been constantly on the move. I have been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false believers. I have labored and toiled and often gone without sleep. I have known hunger and thirst and often gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Besides everything else, I face the daily pressure of my concern for all the churches." Paul achieved great things in his calling as an apostle to the Gentiles, yet he also suffered as a result of that calling as well. Being a witness to Jesus was not easy, and it is not easy. And in our reading from Acts chapter 14, we see both the highs and the lows of Paul's ministry recounted here in the company of his friend Barnabas. Paul and Barnabas travel the 120 kilometers from Pisidian Antioch to what was a relatively unimportant city of Iconium, what is today known as Konya. And as has been the case all through his first mission trip, they go to the synagogue initially to begin their evangelism. And in the synagogue, there were both Jews and Gentiles who had converted to Judaism. And they heard Paul and Barnabas' words, and there was a mixed response. It said a great number believed, but there were also those of Jewish heritage who refused to believe and actively opposed them by stirring up opposition in the wider population. The words, so Paul and Barnabas spent a considerable time at the beginning of verse 3, leave us with a mystery as to how long they remained in Iconium. No one's quite sure. It could have been days, weeks, or months. But it reveals to us the reality of long-term, authentic Christian witness. You need to put in the time. You need to work through the problems you're facing. And even though they spent time there speaking boldly for the Lord, with God confirming his message with signs and wonders, opinion in the city was still divided. And eventually a plot was hatched by some Gentile and Jewish leaders to stone them. And news of this plot reached the ears of Paul and Barnabas, and they decide that the time is right for them to journey onwards. And so they take the road southwards out of Iconium towards the city of Lystra in the province of Galatia. And perhaps they were hoping that Lystra would be a place of retreat, as it's one of the more smallest cities in the region. Yet if anything, the temperature was turned up further in terms of the problems they faced. Things started out well. Paul starts preaching. And in a scenario reminiscent of Peter and John's encounter with the lame man at the gate beautiful, we have Paul looking at a crippled man in the crowd and calling out to him, "Stand up on your feet," at which the man is healed. And the wonder of the miracle produces an initially positive response in the wider crowd. But it also produces confusion, because the Lystrans pronounce Barnabas and Paul to be Zeus and Hermes, the Greek gods in human form, with Barnabas being Zeus and Paul being Hermes, the messenger god, as he was the one who did all the talking. And it even got to the point where the priest of Zeus was bringing out bulls to be sacrificed to them. Talk about awkward. There was a reason, though, for this confusion. The Roman poet Ovid recounts a story from that region of Jupiter and Mars, the Roman names for the gods Zeus and Hermes, taking on human form at one point and visiting homes in the towns and cities of the area and being rejected in this story. So the story of the reaction of these people in Lystra might be a positive response, them trying to counter this negative story from the past, just in case it really was Zeus and Hermes come again. But Paul and Barnabas realise they're getting in a bit of a pickle, really. So they go into firefighting mode. They rend their clothes, showing their spare skin, showing that they're really human, trying to make sure that they're not engaging in blasphemy. And Paul says they're as human as anyone else in Lystra. They're human, but they are bringing good news to them. The Lystrans need to reject all their vain and worthless worship and instead turn to the worship of the living God. Zeus was believed to be the chief god of the Greek gods, the one who was the giver of the rain and the provider of fertile crops. But Paul instead presents the case of the living God being the one who has shown kindness by giving you rain from heaven and crops in their season. He provides you with plenty of food and fills your hearts with joy. Despite sharing these words with the crowd, which called them to focus their worship in a new direction, the crowd was still close to offering a sacrifice to them. But at this moment, a strange cavalry arrived to save them from one frying pan and then proceeded them to throw them straight into the fire. Some Gentile and Jewish leaders arrived who had been less than happy with Paul and Barnabas in Antioch and Iconium. And they managed to convince the crowd that Paul and Barnabas were asking them to do something that they shouldn't be doing, to give up their religion. And the words of these agitators soon won over the crowd, and Paul was stoned, thrown outside the city, and left for dead. Not all of Paul's words fell on stony ground, it seemed, though, because Luke records that some disciples gathered around him outside the city and brought him back in. And the next day he manages to limp towards Derbe, 60 miles east, along with his friend Barnabas, who seemingly managed to go unscathed. This can seem like a disappointing encounter in Lystra. But one thing we need to remember is that Timothy, Paul's later companion, came from Lystra. So one of those people who heard the gospel that day was someone who later aided Paul in his ministry and provided an encouraging role for the early church. As well as inspiring us with positive examples and good strategies in the New Testament also reminds us that mission is difficult. And this passage can help us reflect on some of the difficulties that we might face. So let's think about a few. The first is rejection. We can go with the best of intentions, feeling full of the Spirit, with the zeal of the Lord and the honeyed words of the gospel on our lips, yet our message can go down like a lead balloon with whoever we're talking to. As soon as someone hears you're talking about the Christian faith, in even the most sympathetic, indirect and gracious way, it can be as if a brick wall has been erected between you and them, if you're lucky. If you're unlucky, it can be as if they're about to let you have it with both barrels in response. Paul and Barnabas were rejected in Iconium. And this wasn't likely to have been an unusual response that they faced. They didn't have 100% success rate in their endeavours. Their success rate was maybe quite low in percentage terms. But numbers to respond weren't the measure of success they were going for, as they were scattering God's seed and seeking good soil. What they wanted were small pockets of believers who in time would grow as churches. Jesus faced a similar kind of rejection in his ministry. He had a tremendous response to his preaching, but he was also rejected by his family, in his hometown, in Galilean cities. He was rejected in Samaria, and by eventually some of his own disciples left him because they couldn't cope with the demands of his teaching. There's always the potential when we share the good news of Jesus that our efforts will be rejected. It could be simply that we are ignored. It could be that our efforts produce an angry response. And even if we've spent a long time carefully building up a long-term relationship with someone, when we get to the point of sharing something of our faith, it doesn't mean we'll be successful. To be rejected when we go to share something of the good news, something of our story of faith, will be difficult for us. It will cost us something because we will be sharing something that is important to us. However, even when we have been faced with rejection, we need to keep persevering and not give up in our witnessing. We need to keep going with humility and grace and love so that we will find the good soil, that the seed we sow along with God will germinate and the Spirit will bring to fruit. We can also think that our endeavours in mission and evangelism will work out according to our timetable. We turn up on one occasion or on many occasions. We lay the groundwork, we say the right things, we build a foundation, we think we've got everything ready to share the potted gospel we've got memorised. Then when comes to it, we find that the person we're talking to just isn't ready to hear it, because they've got questions that take us right back to the beginning. I don't know if Paul and Barnabas had a timetable they were keeping to when they visited Iconium, but whatever it was, it went out the window. They instead responded to the situation that was in front of them and stayed longer. How adaptable are we? Do we go into things with a fixed mindset? Do we predetermine how things are going to go? Or are we willing to take as long as necessary? Are we prepared to spend a considerable time, as it said in our passage, doing what we think maybe should only take a moment in our perception? Above all, we need to be attentive to the way that God's Spirit is moving, especially the way it's moving in the heart and mind of the person we're relating to. God will bring his work of salvation to completion at the right time. We just need to put aside our timetable and join in with his. God works in people's lives in different ways at different speeds. And if we understand that, we will recognize that we're simply joining in with what God is already doing in mission and evangelism. And we should be happy to be involved however long it takes. Another common problem we can get ourselves into when we go about mission and evangelism is talking yourself into a bit of a mess. I bet when Paul and Barnabas started out their preaching that day in Lystra, they didn't expect they were going to end up being venerated as gods. Doesn't happen to me that often anyway. As eloquent as you may feel that you are, as practiced as you may feel you are in all the evangelistic catchphrases, it's very easy for us to get in a muddle when we talk to someone about our faith. Why? Because we're talking a different language to people who don't know anything about Christianity. And also, we're not the only person in the conversation. There's someone else. And you can never rely on them to follow the script that you think they should be following. You can end up going down all sorts of rabbit holes if you're not careful. People can easily be confused by what you say. People can easily read into things, into what you've said, that you've never intended. I can't tell you how many times I've had the conversations with people about what they think I've said in my sermons. And I know I've not said that. And they're convinced I've said this. And sometimes I have to go back and listen to the recording of the sermon just to make sure I've not said it. We all interpret things according to our understanding, experience, and mood. We often hear what we want to hear. And that will be the same for the people we're talking to about the gospel. But of course, we can also not be the easiest people to understand as well. Coming out and asking someone if they've been washed in the blood of the Lamb is likely to end up with you having a very strange conversation with someone if you're not immediately ignored. It may be theologically correct, but it doesn't mean it's any way understandable to someone with little or no understanding of the Christian tradition. Conversations may not go how we expect. People may misunderstand what we say, but that may not mean that the conversation isn't going exactly how God intended it to go. We just need to be attentive to the Spirit, listen to what's being said, and adjust our conversation to maybe what the other person wants to talk about. In fact, it's far better to start with what the other person wants to talk about, trust in God, and go from there. Mission, evangelism, and witness can be difficult. We need to understand that, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be involved. Often the most difficult things we do in life are the most rewarding. And if we believe that the new life we've been gifted by in grace by God is the best thing that we have, we should be willing to face the difficulties that may be involved in giving it away and carrying on with the calling to make disciples for the glory of God, which Jesus has laid before us. Let's pray. Lord God, you send us to share your gospel, not with the assurance that it will be easy, but knowing that it is necessary.
Give us boldness and confidence to go in your name. Amen.